Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Today, we're coming to you from SDSU Extension in a couple different locations. My name is Taylor Grusing, and I'm a cow-calf field specialist with SDSU Extension. And I'm excited to have a guest today that is very familiar to the podcast, Dr. Russ Daly, our SDSU Extension veterinarian. So welcome, Russ.
Yeah, thanks, Taylor, for having me.
So spring is finally here. I would say grass is starting to green up, right? And
yeah,
we got a little bit of moisture, whether it was snow or rain across the whole state, I think, last weekend.
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, calving season is off to a good start, I think, for a lot of producers. Like I said, depending on what part of the state you're in, you maybe have some mud. If not, you know, it's been fairly mild. And so I think cows and calves are doing pretty good, you know, maybe dealing with a little bit of sickness on, you know, the temperature swings. But as we get into calving season, the next thing up on the list is breeding season, right? And so we want to talk with Dr. Daly today about semen testing bulls or fertility testing bulls and maybe how to go about, you know, when to do it, what's involved, give everyone kind of a basic understanding of what the results might mean and things like that. So to kick it off, Dr. Daly, why don't you go ahead and explain what the breeding soundness exam or like a fertility exam all includes?
Yeah, so veterinarians will call this the breeding soundness exam. It's probably referred to a lot of vets and producers as semen testing, you know, but in reality, there's more to it than just that. That's maybe the most important part of things. But, you know, a good BSE is going to take into account the physical aspects of that bull, you know, the feet and the legs and especially any hoof problems that are going on. Vision problems, you know, if there's an old pink eye scar or something there, or just any kind of, you know, lump jaw things that are being discovered for the first time, or maybe some chronic things. It's just a good time to get that bull up close, you know, in a shoot where you can really start to look at some of these things. And some of those things are things that producers would have figured out already, you know, when it comes to bad feet or eyes and that kind of thing. Having a veterinarian look at some of these other aspects is really important too. So while we refer to it as semen testing a lot of times, there's more to it than just that.
Seen some of those things, you know, before they even bring them to the shoot. Is that a reason like that they maybe, you know, shouldn't even go ahead and test them? Or are some of those physical abnormalities, you know, not necessarily a reason that they would not be able to breed cows?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, and it probably is an individual decision, you know. So the reason we worry about the feet and the eyes is you know, we need those bulls to basically be pretty athletic during those few months of the breeding season. So they need to travel. They need to see, you know, where they're going, and need to have, you know, no impediments to doing that. So I guess the cop-out answer is always, it depends, you know, a little bit. So if you've
Right.
got, you know, thousands of acres of pasture that bull's got to navigate, yeah, no, it probably is not going to be somebody you're going to want to depend on too much. But if you have smaller pastures and smaller numbers of cows and heifers to put on them, then maybe some of those, you know, those ailments can be overcome. You know, we don't need to work to depend on that bull maybe as much as in that circumstance as some others. So yeah, it really is kind of an individual operation decision on how a subpar bull, you know, when it comes to those physical aspects, is going to be utilized.
Right. And, you know, depending on how long before your breeding season is, you know, there might be some time for some of that stuff to heal. And we'll get into that as we continue talking about, you know, timing of these tests as well. So the physical aspects and then the semen aspects, like you said, is kind of what we initially think about. You know, what goes into looking at the semen?
Yeah. So even before that, you know, the examination of the semen sample, you know, on the reproductive side, we'll look at that the scrotum and make a scrotal measurement. So what we're looking for there is making sure that there's good movement, that the testicles can move around freely in the scrotum. The thing we're worried about there is that bull's ability to regulate the temperature of those testicles. And so in hot weather, you've seen bulls that those testicles are hanging lower to cool off more, and then when it's cooler, then they're bringing them up. So we want to be we want to have a situation where the testicles aren't adhered or basically stuck to that inside, because that could really impede that bull's ability to maintain good temperature for that semen production. So we'll do an exam for the scrotum. Also during that, we'll look at whether there's any scar tissue or scabs on the outside of that scrotum. And if it's bad, that's when we get those adhesions, that stickiness on the inside of the scrotum. In that happens due to injuries, and in our part of the world, the biggest cause would be frostbite. So we look at that for evidence of frostbite. Now, I would say too that if you see the scarring, the scabbiness on the scrotum, that's not necessarily a means to, or a reason to say that he's not going to be a good breeder, but certainly is a reason to make sure that we get a good semen sample and check that bull out. And on the other end of things, I've seen some, we've gone through some pretty harsh winters sometimes, and you don't, and you have a bull come in, and you don't see any external problems on the scrotum, but yet the semen sample will say, no, there's some damage been done. So it's not something that always correlates 100% with what that looks like, but still we can get a good idea of what problems might have been there by looking at that part of the scrotum, and then the scrotal circumference. How big around is the scrotum, and that has a direct effect on fertility. And so a bull has to meet a minimum threshold, depending on their age, of that scrotal circumference. And for a bull that's adult or over 2 years old, that has to be 34 centimeters. And in reality, most of the bulls that are good producers for us in our operations, they're going to have scrotal circumferences much larger than that. But there is a minimum threshold when it comes to that.
That's something that changes as the bull gets, more mature, let's say past, 3, 4 years of age, or does that stay kind of consistent?
It does. It can kind of vary a little bit. It especially varies when there has been an injury to the testicles, like for cold stress, they become mushier and shrink up, over time. So a bull that's consistently been 40 centimeters every year, you've gotten him in and checked him, and now he's 35 or something a lot less, then that might be an indication something happened to him. And then there's it's. We do our best as veterinarians to measure that scrotal circumference fairly among all the different animals that come in, but sometimes bulls with a little bit more fat in that scrotum, and as they put on condition and lose condition during a breeding season, so it can change a few centimeters that way. So there's some little changes that way, but generally, if there's a big dramatic change, there could be something wrong, and that would make us look really even harder at what actually is coming out in the semen sample.
What about anything with the sheath? If sometimes you'll see some, I don't want to say not necessarily scarring, but rough patches, under that. Is that anything to be concerned about?
Yeah, on the outside, that's something to look at and see if there's been some injury there. And that would make it really important to, as part of the process when we're collecting that sample, we're using an electroejaculator, and it's really important to visualize the penis as it comes out of the sheath, and making sure that can leave the sheath. Because if there's adhesions and these scar tissue formation issues in the sheath that doesn't allow the bull to protrude like that, well, that's not going to work either for breeding. So we got to pay close attention to that. And ideally, it doesn't always happen, Some bulls just won't extend with the electroejaculator, but we want to try to manually extend that so we can look at the penis. And especially on younger bulls, we want to make sure there's not any warts there or hair rings or there's something called a persistent frenulum as that bull develops. That those connections that were there as calves need to be broken down and allow that. That penis to fully extend. So sometimes in younger bulls, we have to do a little surgery on them. So it's really important, especially in those, well, all bulls, you want to know what that penis looks like too. So that's part of it. And so, yeah, really so far we've been just talking about the physical attributes of that bull, the physical things that will allow them to actually breed the cow. And we consider those things, before we even look at, the semen that's being produced.
Right. Yeah. Like the first time you bring them up to the chute, or excuse me, when you bring them up to the chute for the semen test, it probably shouldn't be the first time you look at them, right? All winter.
Right.
They've been
Yeah.
on the back 40, hopefully bedding themselves down a little bit, like you said, to
Yeah.
prevent that frostbite. But if you see those things, it's always a good conversation starter, but not
Right.
necessarily a guaranteed reason to cull bulls, because we know they're very expensive this year, which is great to get new genetics. But you also have spent good money on your genetics that are standing right there in the pen. So,
Yeah.
trying to protect them, but then also about give them a strong evaluation, because open
Yeah.
cows are worth, not something we want either.
Exactly. That's why we're doing all this in the first place. The bull is so important in those bull bred herds, of course, to reproduction. And one bad bull or subfertile bull can certainly create some real heartache when it comes time for a preg check.
Right. Yes. So if we go into then the semen quality, we're looking at some, getting a sample, and like you said, with an electroejaculator primarily, in the United States, purely common to see those. There's yearling bulls, mature bulls. We want to be testing all of those, and trying to get that the a good representative sample, right? Like, it's not going to be exactly the same as the full ejaculate when they go breed the cows, but some things we're going to look at is motility, morphology, correct?
Right. So yeah, you're right about the electroejaculator, and some bulls respond to it differently than others. And what we're trying to do there is just plain get a sample. What's being ejaculated from the bull. The volume and that kind of thing is going to be different in the real breeding process, like you mentioned. So all we're trying to do is just get a good representative sample. But yeah, when we get that sample, veterinarians are going to look at that underneath the microscope, and they're looking for a couple things in the current breeding soundness evaluation parameters. And I would stop and say that our profession, the veterinary profession, has a group within it called the Society for Theragenology, and they look at the evidence and the research and apply that to the characteristics that we would be seeing in a semen sample and in a BSE. And so they're always updating these parameters and trying to help ensure that the bulls that pass this test are going to be bulls that we can really depend on for a good breeding season. So they're based on their goal as in setting up these recommendations is we want a bull that we can trust easily to service 25, 30 cows over the course of a 60 to 75 day breeding season. That's kind of the standard that they're looking at. So in order to do that, you have to have a good concentration of semen. You have to have good motility. They have to be good swimmers. And then the sperm cells themselves have to be formed right. The bull's body has to form them in the right configuration. So the main things we look at now would be what we call progressive motility. So looking at putting a drop on a microscope slide and then looking at how do they move. And so at least 30% of those cells on that slide have to be moving progressively all in the same direction. And so that's a little different. We used to consider something called motility, and you would put that drop on the slide and watch, how concentrated the sperm cells were, and watch them move around, and sometimes there'd be vigorous waves that you could even see on the microscope slide. And the society, the latest version of their guidelines tell us veterinarians now that that's not as important. You can have really good bulls that don't have good motility or good swirling action, I guess, overall motility, just because the sample got a little cold, but before the time you looked at it in the microscope. And then likewise, you can have, if there's a bunch of if there's good concentration, but they're all dead and not progressively motile cells, you can have some of that swirling action. Some of the good ones are pushing around the bad ones, so to speak. So they kind of done away with that gross motility in favor of this progressive motility, with the 30% of those sperm have to be doing that. And usually that's not usually the where the bulls would fail, the part of that part of the test. Where they fail more often is in what we call morphology, and that's how the sperm cell actually looks. And so, is it formed right? Does it have the head of the sperm? Is it formed correctly? Are there vacuoles or holes in the head of the sperm cell? Is the tail shaped right? And those kind of things. And so, in order to pass that part of the breeding soundness exam, we have to have 70% normal looking sperm cells. And so a
Okay, so
veterinarian will
much
actually
higher.
do a count of those sperm cells. And usually, a lot of times they'll go hand in hand. If you have a lot of abnormal sperm cells, you're not going to have that motility. But is that morphology is a really important part of the BSE. And I've known, some outfits who have tested bulls in the past where they just look at that, the motility or how things move, and not looking at those individual sperm cells. And that's a shame, because that's where it more than half of the bulls that fail BSEs are going to fail it on the basis of that morphology. So you really have to look carefully at those sperm cells. And veterinarians are progressing this way too, in getting better microscopes. We're learning the better the microscope is, the better you're able to see some of these subtle changes. So the guidelines have changed a little bit over the years. So we used to, and when I was in vet school, we had to spend a lot of time worrying about these abnormalities in the sperm cells. Are they primary or secondary abnormalities? And that referred to, is the abnormality where in where the sperm cell was formed, or did it happen later in storage? And so we thought that there were some differences there. And that's been thrown out. An abnormal cell is an abnormal cell, is what we're saying now. But also in some of those updates, some of the things that we considered abnormalities, one example is a what we call a distal droplet in the mid piece of that sperm cell. So in a sperm cell, you'll have the head, and then you'll have kind of a sleeve beyond that, and then the tail coming out of that sleeve, and that the there's some formation of droplets that have to migrate out of that little sleeve. And sometimes we would see what we call distal droplets, and we'd consider them in the past abnormal. And now what the Society for Theragenology is telling us is, no, those are just a little variation. They're still normal cells, so, but they're just, they look a little weird, but they're fine. That's what they're kind of telling us. So they've
Affect
changed
the
some of that
swimming
stuff.
as much, I would assume,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Now they're
Versus like a bent or a broken
right,
tail,
right,
probably.
right. Yep. Those some of those abnormalities don't affect that ability of the sperm cell to fertilize the egg. But yeah, the bent tails and some of the misshaped heads, misshaped mid pieces, that sleeve I was talking about. are stuff we really pay attention to, and even more so in how the head of the sperm is shaped and some of those holes or vacuoles in there. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong with a sperm cell that would cause a situation where it wouldn't be able to fertilize the egg as well, and that's assessed in that morphology part.
The spermatogenesis process takes about 60 days, is that right?
Yep. From the very start, it's a couple months. So that's a really important thing to realize is, what you're seeing in that sample today was, it got its start 2 months ago.
Right,
So,
yeah.
and really what we're seeing there is kind of a, in a way, it's kind of a looking back on, how that sperm cell was formed and that semen was made, but also what you get out of that sample, if you look at it another way, what you get out of that sample on that day is just a snapshot in time too. So we don't know, if something happened a few weeks ago, like cold stress or heat stress or something that, maybe the bull was running a fever or something like that, and that caused an abnormal spermatogenesis, a few weeks ago. Well, that sample we get today is going to be just fine because it's not reflected yet
Right.
in what we saw in that sample. So that's something to keep in mind too, that what we're seeing in that sample is just that's what he's got today, and it doesn't guarantee that that's going to be the same, next week, or if it was the or was it the same last week too.
Sure. Yeah. So it's kind of looking back to what happened 60 days ago to possibly diagnose what you see today, but then it's going to be different tomorrow. So
Yep,
you
you're
can't
right.
always assume it's a long-term like result, right?
Right.
How much storage like would they have? Do they store like a week's worth or, like over that 60-day period, right? Like
Yeah,
how
it's
long of
yeah,
window
the
do you think it affects it for?
yeah, the 60 days is how long it takes to be formed, and then I think we usually say there's maybe a week or two, of storage, and if it sits around for a long time in storage, it kind of gets reabsorbed back into the body, and a new batch kind of comes in. And that's another point too that I should mention is, when you first get a bull in off the winter range and get him in to have a sample, sometimes you do have that sperm accumulation, that you're dealing with. The vets, we call them rusty loads, I guess, is just, it's just kind of the stale stuff that's been sitting there. And so sometimes you get that bull in, and the first sample you get is just, it's just the motility's not there. Maybe the morphology's right there, but you just got a bunch of dead stuff. And so then that's when you go back, right there that same day, and try them again. And a lot of times that second sample is what you really want to see. So there's that too.
Okay. Yeah. I'd say that's good to know because I think I've heard that before that they maybe need to be cleaned out, right? Or something like that, right? Turn them in with something or get them out to grass to kind of clean themselves out over that period of time.
And that's something that will work its way through the breeding season, of course, but when it comes time for a semen evaluation, that it becomes important, then.
So if they have good progressive motility, good morphology, good physical attributes, is there anything else that goes into the exam?
So back to the physical part of things, the veterinarian will also do a quick rectal palpation,
Right.
mostly in preparation to put the probe in for the ejaculation. But one of the other things that we see a lot of times in well, younger bulls especially, but older bulls too, is a problem called vesiculitis. So there's glands that the veterinarian can feel inside the pelvis that contribute the fluid to the sperm in create forming the semen. So, and that's important for fertility as well. And sometimes we'll see that those glands are swollen, and a lot of times in conjunction with that, if there's infection causing those glands to be swollen, we'll see in the sample, in the semen sample, there's a bunch of white blood cells, and that those white blood cells are a product of the inflammation that's in those seminal vesicles. So that's another reason why the bull would be unfit. You know, he's spitting out more white blood cells than actually the sperm cells. I mean, he might be producing enough sperm cells, but we've got this inflammatory debris along with it, and that's going to hamper his ability to settle a cow too. So that's another reason why an animal might be unfit. Like I say, they might be producing the cells just fine, but what's being dumped into the sample from inflamed, infected glands could be a problem. So in younger bulls, especially bulls that have been pushed high on, you know, concentrate and pushed a little hot on the rations, we feel that, or we know that sometimes in those subclinical acidosis situations, the bacteria can pass through the wall of the rumen into the bloodstream and settle into the vesicles and cause those problems. So younger bulls that are pushed a little hard, a lot of those bulls will it's a self-limiting thing. They'll get over it. Some veterinarians will choose to treat them with antibiotics and then get them back in a few weeks to check and see if it's gotten any better. Young bulls, a lot of times they'll be okay with that. It's not necessarily a culling situation then in the younger bulls. If you see it in older bulls though, a lot of times there we'll do the same thing. We'll try to stimulate them to clean themselves out, kind of like you mentioned, or maybe treat them with some antibiotics. But when you see that situation in an older bull, a lot of times there's enough scar tissue that's formed in those vesicles that it gets harder to treat them. So that's a little bit more of a serious thing in those older bulls compared to younger bulls, but it's common, and you'll hear veterinarians, you know, if you test enough bulls, you'll have one or two that have this condition, and it's good to know about it.
That also produce any blood in the sample too, or what would something like that come from?
Yep, it could. Yeah, if you're getting blood in that sample, and don't see that too often, but it could be coming from an inflamed gland like that, or maybe a little injury in the inside of the urethra, something like that. Or it might be coming from outside, you know, the penis too, you know, and just you're just dripping into your collection too. That has to be something that's investigated and make sure that it's not a permanent situation.
Gotcha. So you can treat for it. Probably got to give them some time to clear it before
Yeah.
you would want to let them service cows, but hopefully
Right.
you want to retest to make sure it is cleared up.
Right. And that maybe is a good entry into, I know you're going to ask about timing, you know, when do we do
Go for it.
this? So if you've got a bull like that, you know, and I've had this, you know, we they're on the trailer out to on their way out to the pasture, and
Yes,
I'm
they
getting
bring them
prepped.
in right before they're turning them up.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, a lot of times that works out. If they're fine, they're fine. But now you got a bull with vesiculitis or some other issue. We're not gonna want to clear him for breeding. You know, we're gonna want to make sure that we get him in later on. So some of the so in you know for vesiculitis, yeah, it'd be at least a couple weeks later we'd want to get them back in and check them again. If we have a bull that's failed, you know, I guess we haven't talked about that yet. We have a bull that's failed the semen test, either the motility or usually in the morphology, we got to give we should give them time in some cases to check them again and see if that problem has worked its way through. So that 60 days is a continual process. And so knowing that, you know, it might take that bull, you know, at a maximum 60 days to get over some insult.
Having
So
no other insults at that
yeah,
time,
in the
right?
meantime, yeah, it's exactly right. So that informs the veterinarian on how, when to tell you to bring him back in for a recheck if it's pretty severe. And there's instances where we look at there's some early damage to the spermatogenesis process. Might have to wait for, maybe even a month or more to make sure that process has cleared its way out. Younger bulls, so we haven't talked about this much either, is, the older, stuff that I learned in vet school was, a third of those bulls that are a yearling bull has, only a third of a chance, a 35% or a third of a chance of passing just because they aren't mature enough yet. Now, I think that's probably changed over the years with our, faster maturing genetics and some of those things. But the fact remains, a yearling bull has a pretty good chance that maybe they're not ready yet, that they just haven't progressed through puberty enough to produce good semen. So those are the ones where we'll call them a classification deferred. And what that is, so you either have satisfactory or unsatisfactory, but then there's this other middle kind of range where he doesn't pass today, but we know that there's probably a good chance he's going to pass again at some point in the future. And that can be that young bull, maybe a vesiculitis kind of thing, or something very temporary that we think has happened to an older bull. And that'll vary on what veterinarians are going to want to tell you to retest, but usually that's at least be at least a couple weeks, before you get them in and check them again. We have that 60 days to kind of inform us. I mean, it could be as long as that, but we want to allow for a chance to retest those bulls if at all possible. And that gets back to, well, how soon do you test before breeding season? And so you want to kind of have that in mind. If this bull, worst case scenario, I think it's always good to prepare for that. If this bull doesn't pass, do we have enough time to retest him before we need him? Or do we have enough time to find another bull if we're kind of short on our numbers? I think, we would have clients who would, the other end of the spectrum from testing them on the way out to the pasture is testing them like in February for a July calving season, because that's when the bull sales are, and that's fine, but there's a lot can happen from then until breeding season, that I kind of worry about that a little bit. But I understand, the mentality. It's always, you don't want to find yourself, with your pants down and not having enough bulls.
Yeah, and bull sales, like you said, start. I mean, honestly, they start November, December now, but I mean, pretty commonly here in the winter and early spring. So a lot of people, yes, will be looking at their bulls, and maybe they're gonna cull them for other reasons, anyways, right? Maybe it's age, maybe it's just wanting to turn some new genetics. But it's hard to say just because they're good today doesn't mean they're gonna be good in a month even, and I think bulls sometimes will test better in warm temperatures, in terms of giving the sample. I know the sample itself isn't necessarily going to change based on that, but as they get closer, they kind of know their job is coming, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. And we saw that in practice too, the bulls that we would test later. We don't consider bulls or cattle to be really seasonal breeders, but I think there's a little bit to it, that as the days get longer, they're just a little more juiced up, to go to work. So it helps the whole process a little better. So I usually think, that 30 to 60 days before you need them, that's kind of the sweet spot of when you should be testing. Not that something couldn't happen in that time frame, before you need them. But then again, there can be something happened after you turn them out to the pasture, that could affect fertility too, and wouldn't necessarily know that. But yeah, generally that 30 to 60 days is probably a good rule of thumb as far as when you want to get them in and get them checked.
Like you said, with yearling bulls, they're going to continually, age, right? So go farther into puberty. And on, on the female side, we hope that they have a couple estrous cycles, before breeding season, right? They're going to be more fertile than when they get bred if they've had a couple cycles. And the bull thing, I think, same thing, right? The more turns of that spermatogenesis, maturing is going to get better. But, if they fail and retesting them, whether it's in 2 weeks or 30 days, you probably want to give them, at least a week, right? To kind
At
of
very least, yeah.
regrow that storage. What's the likelihood that, I mean, they're not for surely going to pass, but is there kind of a percent that you see that still unfortunately fails in that regard?
Yeah, and to me, it's really age dependent. So those yearlings or younger bulls that fail, I'm not too worried about, at least 75 or higher percent of those are eventually going to pass. It's just that I can't say he's good to go on this day. And I do think, a lot, most of them will be okay, but then there's some that won't. And so, generally, I mean, we can kind of tell, I think, if a yearling bull has just, maybe not the motility maybe that's there, or kind of we're just kind of sparse on our sample. We know that he's producing good stuff, just not enough of it maybe, that he's going to be okay. But then there's some that, some that won't be okay, and so that's why we have the classification deferred. And generally, if we keep good records on these, every vet is recording the stats on each one of these bulls. And so if he's the same, in 2 to 3 to 4 weeks from then it's not looking good. But if he's improving, maybe not quite passing yet, but if he's improving, then that's a pretty good sign. An older bull that fails, I'm kind of worried about. I don't Usually they're not gonna test any, better, in 2 to 4 weeks. But in a valuable bull or a good bull that you've had before, you do want to give them that benefit of the doubt. But as the bulls get older, that first fail is usually more indication that there's something going on.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask in terms of he passes or maybe says does not pass, right? So he's unsatisfactory. Maybe still had some motility there, right? It's not gonna say that he's not gonna get a bull or a cow bred at all, but you don't want to rely on him by himself. So when we get groups of bulls together, that plays a dynamic in it as well in terms of, pasture size, like you said, and they all got to be able to do their job. Otherwise, you're going to be putting a lot of weight on the shoulders of one bull.
And that's a really good point, is that we'll never hardly ever see a sterile ball. Right. I mean, that just doesn't happen. They're at least producing something. But those subfertile bulls, and we call them subfertile, I mean, because, you don't want to turn them out with your feedlot heifers, because he's going to get something bred. And the other thing is, I'll hear producers say, well, okay, he's not up to speed. He didn't pass. He's still got some sperm cells right there, doc. So I'll just turn him out with the rest of them, and just a bonus kind of situation. Well, it sounds good in theory, but what we know that the dynamics of those bulls in multi-bull pastures can be an issue. So what if that dud bull is the dominant, one that won't let any other bulls breed the cows? And so that's a problem we'll get into. So for that reason, a subfertile bull shouldn't really be out there on pasture because of that potential. We should, make sure that the ones we have out there are ones that have passed to a breeding soundness exam, and that we can depend on them to be really solidly able to service that number of cows in that number of days.
And yeah, the dominance factor is something you can't necessarily control. You know,
No.
if he is the dominant bull out there, it's not going to be probably beneficial to you to turn it out. And, you know, most likely mature bulls are probably going to be more dominant than like a yearling, let's say.
Right.
But, you know, how we put bulls out to pasture, and obviously based on everyone's own unique breeding decision, but you know, you have, I don't want to say like backup, right, for a yearling bull who hasn't done it yet, putting a mature bull out there, but getting him to your place, you know, plenty ahead of time, if you are bringing in new bulls, kind of figure out that hierarchy in the pen before they go out to service cows is important as well.
Yeah, and that's a whole other, subject that
A
could
whole
be
other
a source of another
podcast.
podcast, managing those bulls.
So with that, if you are buying new herd bulls, you know, should you test them right away when they get to your place? Even if they came with a semen test, like should we look at trying to get, you know, a test after they've, you know, been hooves on the ground at your place?
Yeah, I think in general, you probably don't need to worry too much about retesting. I mean, if you have faith in that seed stock producer and faith in that person who is doing the evaluation, and they passed enough to get put on the sale, probably you're okay, assuming that it's going to be a fairly, within the 30, 60 days of needing them, even maybe a bit longer if we're. The thing with getting bulls in, if they passed and got on the bull sale in February and March, our weather is probably just going to get better, as far as we're probably not going to have too many, frostbite issues in between, when you purchase them and when you need them. But if there is that, I mean, if something happens, right after you get him home, even if he has been tested. If you're worried about frostbite or a real bad cold snap where you couldn't get him bedded down, yeah, then it would be a good idea to check him again before he goes out.
At the end of the breeding season, should we test our bulls then to make sure they're still good, or is that just kind of a waste of time since it's a
Well,
snapshot?
probably not something that you need to routinely consider. When we get into post-breeding season, checks. It's usually when we've already been through the ultrasound or the preg check, and we've got a lot of open cows or late cows, and now, so then it makes sense to test those bulls and see if you could put a finger on who the culprit is, or if it
Sure.
was a bull thing. Maybe it wasn't a bull thing. So that'd be the time when we'd want to get them in afterwards. And test them. It's not, yeah, after you see a problem, generally, the main thing is just to make sure that before the breeding season next year, that we get a good, sample on him.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think it's just kind of a, you know, some people might do it for insurance purposes, I guess I've heard of more recently,
No.
with all of, you know, the fertility insurance available.
Okay, yeah.
But otherwise, it seems like you probably want to do it closer to when you're going to need them again,
Yeah.
essentially.
Yeah. There's a whole long winter that can happen in between
Right.
then and now. Yeah.
Right. With the new arrival of bulls, we've talked about biosecurity before on the podcast, but you know, that's an opportunity to bring in new, you know, diseases, right? You know, we mostly keep closed herds, you know, you think of, right? If you're not buying cows, you think, oh, I have a pretty closed herd. But if you're bringing in new bulls, you know, that's not necessarily the case, right? And
Right.
so what's some good practices? You know, keep them segregated for 30 days, I think is what you've said in the past. But what other things should we be considering when we're bringing them in?
Yeah, isolating them from the rest of the bull. I mean, eventually, like you mentioned, you got to acclimate them to the rest of the crew. But yeah, just that isolation, making sure that any if they need any vaccinations, if they need any testing done for BVD or anything like that, then this is a good time to do that. But generally, you're just wanting to make sure that the stress of transportation, the stress of being on a new place, doesn't make them blow up with some shedding something that could make your other animals sick. And most of the time we're talking about the normal kind of things, respiratory disease, viruses and that. But just that gives us a good chance to do some of those getting ready kind of steps for them to enter the breeding herd. And if they haven't been tested, this would be a good time for that isolation period to be a good time for semen testing too.
Okay. Yep. So getting into the vaccinations that we could give, we've done, or you've done some work with Dr. George Perry on the female side of pre-breeding vaccines. What do we need to be looking at for our bulls in terms of time frame and, what we could be giving them?
As far as what we're giving them, we really kind of mimic the cow herd, and we vaccinate the cows in order so they can hold on to their pregnancies so they don't have a wreck from a reproductive disease. Of course, bulls don't have to worry about their pregnancy, but we have to consider that they can harbor red nose virus and BVD and those things that can pass on. Maybe not necessarily through the semen, but just nose to nose out there on the pasture. So we need to vaccinate those bulls against those things. There's other things that individual farms could consider too. Pink eye vaccine would be something to consider. Some vets will advocate for foot rot vaccines. Anthrax is something we need to get into the bulls in certain operations for sure. And the good news is, so we've talked before about what you mentioned with being careful about our vaccines on the female side of things. The good news is that there's evidence to show that even modified live vaccines, if we give them to bulls right before semen testing or right at the time of semen testing, that that has not been shown to affect their ability to pass a BSE. So
Okay.
it doesn't seem to have the effect on the bulls' reproductive system as it might the cows. So the normal thing that would happen when we would semen test bulls is, this is really the only time you got them in the chute. So here's the time to give them their porum and do all the vaccinations. And from what we know, that's okay. That's a good time to do it. And that's not going to be something that's going to be detrimental to their ability to breed or pass the semen test even.
About the injectable dewormers, does that have an effect on them at all?
No, not any evidence that I'm aware of that would affect them. Of course, whenever you're vaccinating or using any injectables, you want to be clean about things. Last thing you want to do is give a bull a big old abscess on the neck, in the week before he's going out to breed. So you gotta be careful about and reasonable about that stuff. But there shouldn't really be any problems with any of those other treatments at that time.
We give too many things at once. If we're giving, four shots for vaccines plus a, injectable dewormer, maybe we're doing fly tags, other kinds of, I don't want to say nutritional supplements things, or is there, what's kind of that rule of thumb? I know, on the cow herd side that you're only supposed to give so many of one type of vaccine.
The vaccine we're worried about is any vaccine that contains gram-negative organisms in them. And so when we give more than two of those at a time to a bull, some people will say even more than one of them at a time to a cow or a bull or any cattle really, we have the chance of too much what we call endotoxins getting into them. And endotoxins are just a byproduct of making that vaccine. And some of them are just floating around in the vaccine dose. And every dose of vaccine that gets sold is tested for a minimum amount of those. So one vaccine doesn't have enough to cause any potential problem. But that's when you give like three of those things at the same time. Well, what's below the threshold in one, now you're adding two more to it, and now you might have a thing where you could have too much endotoxin. And then that would show up in a bull as That could be something that could affect fertility in giving them a fever, kind of a shock response. It's usually something that adult animals are going to get over. In cows, it could actually cause some pregnancy losses if you give them to pregnant cows. But so the ones we'd have to be worried about would be those pre-breeding shots with Vibrio. You know, that's a Lepto and Vibrio. Those are gram negatives. It's just the bottle of vaccine. It's not the fact that you have two different gram negatives in the bottle. But if you have that type of vaccine, that would count. And then add to that a pink eye vaccine, you know, that would count too. And usually we're not, and then a foot rot vaccine would be another one. So if we gave those three, that'd probably be too much at one time. But in general, we can get away with a couple of those to bulls and not really see too much of a problem. It's a good time to do it, you know, when we have them in the chute for semen testing.
Right. Yeah, that's just something I feel like I've heard a little bit more recently of, obviously we recommend everyone work with their unique veterinarian that knows your herd, knows your disease risk. And so finding out the annual, vaccination program that your cow herd needs, that your bulls need, maybe it's throwing one of those things in at preg check time, for the cows or the bulls just to alternate. When so you're not giving maybe as many at one time, but something interesting I feel like that has changed as we have more options for things like dewormers, right, with the injectables versus the pour-ons versus the orals. Like maybe it's mixing up the route of administration for one of those other things too. Awesome. Well, I think we're getting close to the covering the topic. Anything else on your mind in terms of what we need to be looking for when we're testing bulls and how producers should approach the breeding season?
Yeah, I think we covered it really well. There's a lot to talk about when it comes down to
It
it.
is.
And there's more to talk about too. We could get into, you know, what happens after they're out on pasture too, and injury, sheath injuries, you know, or something we could talk about.
Yep.
That's kind of an emergency situation, sheath injuries and what we call a broken penis, and those are things that would really limit the ability of a bull to do his job out there. I guess kind of just suffice it to say for us today is that even though he's passed the breeding soundness exam and he's good to go on day one, doesn't necessarily mean that something's not going to happen to him out on pasture. And the sooner we can recognize some of those things, we might have more of a chance of treating them. Observing things once they're out there, observing mating, you know, because we don't test for libido when we're doing the semen testing. It's so making sure that everything's working out there as far as the bulls and the cows go. So it's not something we can just say he passed his test, he's good, and stuff can happen still.
And a lot of breeders selling bulls, will have a first breeding season guarantee, and whether that, comes up with an injury, 30 days in, that's the conversation to have with your seed stock provider, to see, get the veterinarian out there right away to assess it if it's something we can treat or, watch. But anytime we have single bull pastures on cows, then it becomes a really, really big issue to make sure they are mounting correctly, getting the job done, and they have to be good. Recently talking to a couple seed stock providers, that really did focus on genetics and parentage, of that, the new DNA technology or parentage testing has really helped them manage that situation. So if you really need to know the sires, of the calves, we can do some parentage testing for relatively cheap these days. Gives you some backup insurance of having two bulls out there to cover your cow herd, and still gives you the ability to have marketing and genetic insight into those calves. So, yeah, I was going to mention those couple of things about watching their breeding behavior, and then you can find some more information on like body condition score of bulls on on our website. There's quite a few articles I think out there talking about, turning them out in good condition because they are going to be athletes out there. They need to be doing their job. So they are going to lose weight. So trying to keep them in put them in good shape on their way out, but maybe not too good of shape. There's been, I think, a previous podcast I visited with Dr. Pedro about, what that fertility could look like if a bull is overconditioned. So that'll be something to keep in mind too, just to make sure that they can do their job in more ways than one.
Right.
So awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Daly. If anyone needs to contact him, his information is on the website, extension.sdstate.edu. You can reach out to him via email or phone call. He's almost wrapping up probably his teaching duties for the semester on campus,
Close.
and we'll have him out and about hopefully this summer at a couple events. And so, with that, this has been Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Until next time, eat beef.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.